We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 308 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and he's Emil Avanesyan. Emil, it's your first appearance. Actually, I went back in the archives, not too far, but since Xavi has managed the game at Barcelona, three to be exact. How are you feeling, especially with Real Betis coming up this weekend?
I know, I'm excited. It's I'm starting my personal Xavi era here, and it's a good time so far. So I like it. I'm looking forward to the Betis game. Just generally, I enjoy Real Betis contests anyway, just, on their own merits. But this one in particular is really looking forward to it, actually.
Yeah, I cannot dislodge my memory from the goal that Messi scored back in 2019.
Oh, yeah.
what a ridiculous goal. And yeah, Real Betis, the Marc Bartra stuff. And there's just so many connections always between the club. And there's so many culés whose second club is Real Betis. It seems to always be.
That's kind of my situation. I really like them. Joaquin is one of my favorite non-Barca players. I remember I watched him in the 2002 World Cup, and because he was like, 19 or 20 maybe? And he was amazing.
Yeah, Real Betis at the moment, it's interesting because in three of their last five games, they've had red cards, which is pretty bad. Real Betis play a dangerous style, we'll have to say. They play... they could get themselves in trouble very quickly, as many Manuel Pellegrini teams can. But I think it's going to be another good test for Barcelona, because for Real Betis as well, they're sitting at fifth in the table right now.
Yeah.
3 points in front of Barcelona, and they're 1 point behind Sevilla. So it is a tight race at the top with that top seven. At the moment, I think Barcelona have kind of, with Xavi, reestablished themselves just a step ahead of Espanyol and Athletic Club and the likes of Osasuna and Valencia. Real Betis is going to be a test. So unfortunately, we are not going to be really previewing Real Betis or anything. We're going to be talking about all the other nonsense that kind of passed in the last week. And that's what happens, right? When you give culés too much time to win a midweek game, and you give them too much time to kind of figure out what's on Twitter, but also the Ballon d'Or. So let's hit any Ballon d'Or stuff first. We actually recorded earlier in the week while the ceremony was going on. So I did not know when the last of our listeners heard that Pedri won the Copa trophy for the best U21 player. Yep. I expected Alexis Putellas to win the women's Ballon d'Or. I was almost talking myself out of it with the English media, who were trying to make it a story and make something of it that, maybe she won't win, but she was always going to win. I knew that. Yeah. I called it inevitable. I felt it was inevitable. And then Messi won the men's Ballon d'Or. And I think there's a general consensus that Lewandowski deserves the one from 2020 that didn't happen. And then Messi deserved the one in 2021. And then again, Alexia and Pedri had no one near them for their trophies. But do you think I'm missing anything from the discussion? Obviously, Twitter always seems to be an argument. But having said the words that I just said out loud, it doesn't feel like anything should have been an argument. I don't
think so. I think everybody's, by and large, Alexia, I think, as you said, it was always going to be someone from Barça Femení to win the women's Ballon d'Or. I suppose you could have said maybe Jenny Hermoso or, but it was Alexia's to, not even hers to lose. It was hers that she had won and made a completely bulletproof case for winning. And Pedri's was
a little surprised that Jenny actually finished second. That was actually a bigger surprise than Alexia winning the whole thing, if that sounds odd at all. Just because I figured that how is Jenny going to couple? I mean, there were so many candidates from the Barça Femenil.
Yes.
So they're really going to round it out. And I figured that Lecky Martins wasn't going to be the one to take that step in. Same thing with Sanjo. So it was going to have to be Jenny. But with the time she missed, I figured that Fran Kirby, just based on the voting and I figured that Fran Kirby would finish second. So it was actually, I mean, pretty incredible to see that Alexia Putellas is, I mean, you know, best friend and partner, Jenny Hermoso wound up getting second. I mean, that's just wild to me, right? I can't imagine being in a war and having my wife get second. But it felt the same, like as Messi, Xavi, and Iniesta being the entire podium.
I mean, it kind of is. Yeah, it's very reminiscent of that because what was it? Five of them were shortlisted, right? And so they made up 20% of the shortlist and took first and second. So it's pretty good. And I mean, I agree with you on Pedri as well. I don't know who exactly. I mean, I was reading some of the candidates who, you know, who rounded out, I guess, like the top four or five. And I don't know how you could make a case for anyone even being in Pedri's class, just given what he's done and just how, I don't know, I guess just how incredibly forcefully he's established himself from being like a 17-year-old that was signed from Las Palmas, and you know, you hope he develops into a good player. And what he's done over the past year, I don't know that there's any player that's made that kind of a leap and a contribution. And then, you know, on the men's side, I think you're right. I'm surprised a little bit that the Lewandowski Ballon d'Or, that kind of the consensus is that 2020 should have been Lewandowski's. Like, I'm surprised, you know, I'm going to make the obligatory NBA reference here, but I'm surprised that there wasn't kind of a Karl Malone or Charles Barkley wins the MVP because you've done really well. We can't expect you to be better than Jordan, but by your standards, you've been exceptional. Yeah. I mean, that being said, like, it's, you know, Messi by his own standards had, it would be a little disingenuous to call it a ho-hum year, but he had, you know, just sort of a good year by his standards. And it was what, like 58 goal contributions or something like that between goals and assists. And we've said it so much. It is unfair to judge others by the standard that Messi has set. But, you know, I mean, I guess that's sort of where these guys find themselves. You know, you happen to be the second to fifth best players in, you know, in the moment where this completely irresistible force happened upon the sport. And, you know, like, it stinks. I agree. Robert Lewandowski should probably have a Ballon d'Or just kind of on the sheer volume of everything that he's done in his career and all that he's accomplished. But I don't know. I find it difficult to get too worked up about it.
Yeah, no, it's not worth anything. I see Jorginho on third on the list and I go, okay, well, it's not worth getting worked up on. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah. Madrid-based media, how they were obviously screaming for Karim Benzema, but he was quite a few votes behind Lewandowski and Messi, who actually were only separated by 33 votes, which is not much at all, considering that the likes of Donnarumma had 36 votes, right?
Yeah.
Kaku had 26 votes. So to say the line of separation between the two was not much, and you could definitely tell that especially German media and Polish media were all behind Lewandowski for it. And it's a shame that I think Messi also had the quote himself that he said, hey, why don't we just give this guy the one from 2020? Why did they?
Yeah, I think he told him.
It didn't make any sense. So, all right. I think that puts that to bed, but you know, I kind of say Lewandowski, I know Barcelona won't be getting Lewandowski anytime soon, but they might get another forward. So I think back to the field, and by back to the field, I mean, back to Twitter, because there was no midweek match, as I said this week. So Kool-Aid's obviously had their heads turned by transfer rumors. And that's going to happen when you have a week off, even usually it's the international break, but the three names in particular. Mm-hmm. And I think these are three names that we have to take very seriously because they keep popping up and they popped up many, many times, the exception of Arthur Cabral. But I think Arthur Cabral will start here with him because I think you do have to take him seriously just because of what his price might be. If he's 10 million in the wintertime from FC Basel.
Yeah.
You have to take that seriously. You know, I wrote an article about him that he's a 23-year-old Brazilian center forward, 24 goals in 25 appearances this year, plus 8.
Yeah.
I think the big issues with him is that he's still a bit of an unknown, not only the international scene, because he even wasn't considered a major Brazilian prospect. So, you know, like there are those reclamation, and you and I know basketball. So, you know, those reclamation projects like a Josh Jackson, who was drafted by the Suns, fourth overall.
Yeah.
He'll still bounce around because he was a fourth overall pick, or Harry Giles, right, who was a number one overall high school recruit. Like 11th because of knee injuries, but still, I think those guys continue to get chances just because they showed so much.
Yeah, someone's always going to gamble on the sort of the pedigree and the potential.
Right. But Cabral actually is not that. He was not a major Brazilian prospect. He's splitting football between Sierra, CS, kudos to anyone who's not Brazilian and has heard of that team, and then Palmeiras. I mean, Palmeiras is a big name, but he only made two appearances for the side over 6 months in 2019 before moving to Switzerland. So he really didn't even become this big professional, if you will, until like 21 years old. So he has scored 62 goals in 100 appearances arriving from the 2019-20 season. And I watched every goal that he scored at FC Basel, and most of them are finishing off of crosses and rebounds, either with his feet or his head. That seems to be his bread and butter. Just putting the ball in the back of the net, finishing very much like Martin Brathwaite, almost like an upgrade. If you watch both of their goal compilations, it feels
like a good call. Yeah,
Brathwaite-ness to him, with the difference that Brathwaite can also play on the wing. And this guy just seems to be a guy that's going to be in the middle of the field, clogging things up and being a danger there. So creating chances is not something he's going to do for himself, but that's also not the Blaugrana's problem. It's finishing. Yeah. And Cabral just seems to be a prime candidate to be a guy that you get for 10 million euros to put the ball in the back of the net. I think, Emil, that there is a chance that we could immediately say, but what about Kevin Prince-Boateng? What about, and just name other forwards that came on the cheap that feel similar. But I think Cabral just seems like a bit of an upgrade to that. I mean, especially being 23 as well, he is not this known commodity that you're getting and hoping you get their best years. Cabral, you're actually just getting to be a young player who's still seemingly on the ascent.
I agree. And I do think that, okay, so the Swiss league isn't, you know, the highest standard in Europe or anything, but
that'd be the worry. Yeah.
Yeah. But conversely, it's, you know, it's the level that he's been put in and he's doing really well at that level. It's not that he hasn't hit some sort of a ceiling. He hasn't found a standard or a league. It's not like he returned to the Swiss league after trying, you know, Italy or England or something like that and flaming out. And now he's taking a second run up at a, you know, move to a major league. He's thus far done, you know, what's been asked of him. And he's a style of player that, yeah, he doesn't strike me as sort of the classic goal scorer that the Barca boasts and, you know, the classic Barca teams tend to have, but he is a lot of what this team needs. And, you know, I mean, we're still learning what, you know, what Xavi's Barca is going to look like and what, you know, how that attack is going to be formulated and, you know, what their approach is going to be. But I do think that if this guy just has an aptitude for being there in the box, getting onto the ball and just stuffing it into the goal, needless to say, I mean, any club can use a player that has a nose for goal and, you know, puts the ball away. This Barca team in particular needs that. I mean, because we're starting to see a little bit more encouraging play, at least, you know, in attack and things like that. But we really need it to translate into tallies on the scoreboard. Yeah, I mean, encouragement and, you know, positive press conferences and moral victories and stuff are great, but these guys need to score goals, they need to win games, and they need to accumulate points. And the thing is, I mean, the guy is still young. I mean, he's only going to be 20. I mean, he won't be 24 until April, I see here. And he's never flamed out in a big league. So it's not like we're trying to necessarily, it's not like he is a reclamation project. I mean, he's a guy who, like you said, wasn't a highly touted Brazilian prospect, but has turned himself into a better than a goal every other game player in, if not one of the most major leagues in Europe, you know, a Champions League worthy league in Europe, you know, and just
Champions League worthy team. I mean, FC
exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, at the best team in, you know, or one of the best teams in Switzerland, and, you know, presumably, you know, Basel can find a, you know, a striker of, you know, up to their level. They decided to take a chance on him, and it's worked out. I mean, the guy's, you know, he scored 60 and 100, or, you know, what, 62 and 100 or something. And honestly, for 10 million, given the financial constraints that Barca are still under, I do think it's a worthwhile gamble. I mean, I don't think there's a huge risk of a player with this kind of profile absolutely flaming out, because I think a lot of what he relies on for his goals are sort of bread and butter skills. And in many cases, you know, when you play on a Barca team, you're going to be the more skilled of the two teams taking part in that game. Your teammates are going to get attention as well. There's going to be space in the box because your teammates are commanding attention and hopefully, you know, distorting the shape of the defense. And there should be opportunities for a guy who can get onto the ball in front of the goal and just put it away.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The things that would worry me about him would just be him learning a press or learning a really complicated system. He is a, when we say 23, he's a young 23, as I said, because his professional career is actually just as long as Pedri and Ansu's, right? So like, when they're 23, that's going to be an old 23 because they would have been
like
7 years. He's really only, again, been a top flight professional for a little over 2 years. So Cabral has had this super elongated, you know, he wasn't a Brazilian prodigy like so many others, as I said, who come up at 15, 16, 17 years old, or one of those, again, Santos project prospects at 17. But yeah, Cabral, the rumor of Cabral almost has faded in the last few days, just because you could tell that Barca, they're calling Karim Adeyemi. They want to try to line that one up for from Red Bull Salzburg. They want to line that one up for the summertime, it seems like. And then for Karim, or for Adeyemi, it seems like he is very likely going to go to Dortmund in the place of Erling Haaland when Erling Haaland inevitably leaves, likely for the Premier League in the summertime. So it seems like not everything, because we read everything from a Barca perspective.
Yeah.
Like Erling Haaland to Barcelona is almost as dead could be, just because of the constraints. And Erling Haaland is very, very, very likely going to the Premier League. And I mean, it's also another one of those reasons why there are clubs in the Premier League, like a Man City, who are saying, oh, okay, maybe, and we're going to get to Ferran Torres now, because there are clubs like Man City who say, okay, we'll get rid of Ferran Torres, but we're going to recoup as much money as we possibly can.
Yeah.
And we're going to get Erling Haaland. And so that means Dortmund is going to be sitting on Erling Haaland money. That means they'll likely get Adeyemi, who Bayern Munich wants him, if Barca wants him. That means that he's a player that a lot of different clubs want. So Adeyemi will go to Dortmund. And then that leaves Barcelona, though, I think, besides Cabral and Adeyemi, because that is much more of a central forward position, this Dembele, Ferran Torres stuff. So usually I don't have the main segment of our show being the last segment of our show, but it is because this is twofold. Like, we're asking the question, is Ferran Torres Dembele's replacement? Is that how this is being lined up? And I think, Emil, it's safe and fair to start with the Dembele part of this. What we do know, there's a lot of nonsense and a lot of not facts out there. I think what we do know is that his agent Moussa Sissoko has already rejected an offer from Barcelona.
Yep.
And Barcelona's president, Laporta, even today said that with his contract expiring in June, Dembele's renewal, this is quote, Dembele's renewal is going slower than we wanted. Yep. But we're still working on it. We want Ousmane to stay. He could be a key player if we'll reach an agreement. And we have seen reports that his priority is to stay, provided the club increases their current offer. We've also seen reports that he has 1 foot out of the club or a foot and a half out of the club and is going somewhere else. But I think what we do know, as much as this is 50-50, what we do know is that Barca, I think, went low with their first bid, that his agent, because his contract is up in June, does currently have the financial leverage to look, listen to other offers and say, hey, in January, we could sign with somebody else already, right? Because we're going to be a free agent. So I think his agent is doing his due diligence to see if other clubs will bite on that injury record, if other clubs will bite on what Dembele could be. He's trying to see what the potential offers are. If his agent calls around and there are no competing offers, then Barcelona retakes all the leverage because he has been, that being Dembele, their injured player. And he's set up in Barcelona. He's set up in the team. He's under Xavi. And even with Ferran Torres, he would know what Xavi wants from him. So obviously at this juncture in negotiations, you have to understand where we're at, that his agent has retaken some of that leverage to be able to say, hey, we're going to try to pay him like a Ballon d'Or candidate somewhere. And if there are no takers, they're going to come right back to Barcelona. And that renewal is going to be, you know, much closer to being done, I'd say. And I'd say it's 50-50. Is that the kind of number that you think is fair for this?
So one other thing that I read, I think it was yesterday or today from, I don't know if it was from his camp, but it sounds like the sort of thing that they were, it sounded like a little bit of, I don't know if it's an olive branch or just showing how they're positioning themselves in the negotiations. They said that there is no intention to leave in the winter transfer window. So, you know, in that sense, it sounds like he said that he's not going to leave in January. He's going to be here through the end of the season. So it's either get a deal done or he's leaving for free in the summer. Now, I understand theoretically why they think they can get Ballon d'Or candidate money for him, because on the times when he is fit and, you know, firing on all cylinders, he looks the part of that. But I don't foresee, I mean, I don't know what there is in the track record in these past 4 years, both in terms of how he's produced when he has been healthy, and frankly, the dearth of time in which he has actually been healthy, that would entice another club to pay top of the market values for him. I mean, if I'm another club, the only way I'm really pursuing him, I mean, and I understand at the same time, I understand why Barca, you know, went a little bit low with their first offer too. It's, he was brought in, he was, I don't know exactly what his wages are, but he's been on big wages since he arrived in Barcelona. And there's been precious little return on that investment. I don't think that I'm not saying that he can't be great. And, you know, when he is right on those occasions, he is really electric, and he looks the part of a guy that you want front and center on your team, but there just hasn't been enough of a track record of him putting together a sustained, you know, not since he played at Dortmund has there been any track record of him putting together a sustained run of quality play and not battling some sort of a minor injury or, you know, this or that. So, I mean, if I were Barca, on the one hand, I would tell him to go ahead and, I guess, shop his wares and see what the market bears. And, you know, at that point, I don't know where the relationship actually lies. And because if Barca can get an idea of where the market is, yeah, maybe you top it by a little bit to keep a guy that you want to keep. But at the same time, I don't know that the market for him is going to be as robust as he and his agent are trying to speak into reality.
I mean, I just don't think there are a lot of options, though, in world football that do what he hypothetically can do. But the big difference, again, about contract leverages, too, and going back to the NBA one more time, that the Denver Nuggets were kind of forced to make that deal for Michael Porter Jr., always knowing that he had a back injury, always knowing he had fallen in the draft because of a back injury. In the case of LA, what Dembele could do if he's healthy, that idea, I mean, even though at 24 he's missed 688 days of football in 4.5 years, which is a lot. I mean, that's
almost a tenth of his life
that he's missed, that he's on the side, he's been recovering, he's been recuperating, he's working out. I mean, what he's capable of and what he is at 24, it is kind of that put up or shut up moment in his career. where he's going to have to bank on himself. And the other thing too, and I don't know how much I do believe these reports that he feels like a change of scene might be good for him. And I mean, it's not crazy to think that he had his whole career at Rennes Rennes, and he had his whole career at Dortmund for 2-3 years when he was becoming a professional from the French club and Dortmund. And he was like, okay, this is the player I'm going to be. I have this potential. And it's been 5 years now of basically being almost the same player and not getting to that next level as much as he probably enjoyed being at Barcelona. But the one thing I also ask people to do is kind of ignore it. It's difficult to do, but ignore those reports, because I saw one by a Catalan newspaper today. I mean, you can figure out which one of the two it might be, about how Dembélé was the last one to come to that team dinner. And
last night's dinner. Yeah.
Came an hour after Pedri. And once I heard Pedri was the tip off that was a Catalan paper Mad Lib.
Yep. So,
like, which player is late to the dinner? Was it Umtiti or was it Dembélé?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Right? And then which player was there first? Was it Pedri or was it Gabi or was it right? And then
maybe Nico, someone like that. Yeah.
Best behavior is the one that was an hour early, right? So Pedri is perfect. Pedri's always an hour early.
Oh yeah,
is obviously an hour late. So
yeah,
so Pedri was the tip off that it was an absolute Mad Lib of nonsense. So I always ask you, try to ignore those stories. I mean, just think of this as a business negotiation. That is what you always have to do with these. And I understand from the Barca perspective, and Xabi has himself said it, that if a player wants to be here, I want him here. And if he doesn't want to be here, get lost. And that's kind of been a prideful Barcelona adage for a long time.
Yeah.
You want players that want to be here. And I totally understand that. And I think all clubs should operate in that manner, that they want players who are going to actually be bought in and not create further problems down the line. Because I mean, that's what happens when you don't have, when you have players that are playing for themselves and not bought into what you're trying to build, then you're going to have an issue again in 2 years with his contract negotiations or an extension or, it is at the end of the day, a business decision, and think of it that way. Now, I think it's time to do the Ferran Torres part of this. And the reason why we talk about Ferran Torres is Fran Vitera, who is the CEO, who said that there is a bit of money to potentially spend in January and potentially in the summer. That could be that gate revenue is done really well, even though at gate, Barcelona have not exceeded the expectations they had. I think they were hoping when they came back up, they'd get 60 or 70 K. But, you know, having dealt with 30 to 50 K on average now with these games, I think gate revenue is, again, not crazy to what it could be, but there might be some money to spend. And how likely do you think that there's a chance that it'll be Ferran Torres and Dembélé, of Dembélé renewal plus Ferran Torres? Or do you think that Ferran Torres is just that inside lane bet that the club is making, that Dembélé is as good as gone?
I definitely think there's a, you know, when I say non-zero, I mean, I think there's a decent chance that that is the wager that the club is making. That, because going back to what you said about, the rumors or the speculation that it might, you know, Dembélé might be just in search of a change of scenery and, you know, he doesn't want this situation anymore and things like that. I mean, that's entirely conceivable, because as great a city as Barcelona is and as awesome a place as it is to live, especially with, like, if you have money and, you know, everything like that, strictly speaking, his experience here can't have been overwhelmingly positive. Like, I mean, there's no way that his professional experience in Barcelona has measured up to his expectations or his hopes or his aspirations, anything. So it is entirely possible that he's going to hold out for some sort of ginormous offer, not really meet Barcelona on their own terms as far as negotiating wages. And maybe he's gone in the summer. And so you do have to make some sort of plan for that. You have to have a contingency for that. At the same time, I think the only way you get Ferran Torres is if Dembélé leaves, because I don't know that the financial state of the club has recovered to a point where you can give Dembélé a salary with which he's content, at the very least, if not thrilled, and also what fork out some money for Ferran Torres and then pay him too. Because, so what is it? I mean, Barca have said, the numbers that I keep seeing is, Barca have said, I guess they can go up as high as, and I don't know how accurate these are, but Barca have said they can go as high as, what, 40 million? I mean, they can maybe stretch it to 50. And I've heard at one point Man City wanted 80. Now they might be willing to, you know, do business at 60. I mean, that's still one, that's still a decent gap in terms of what Barca want to pay and what Man City want.
Well, especially in this market. That's
in this market. Million. And because, I mean, even a 60 million euro, yeah, I mean, even a 60 million euro player in the before times was, you know, that's a serious investment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to now conceivably do whatever you have to do and bend over backwards to make this happen, I don't really know how conceivable that is. But I do think in order for it to happen, it probably necessitates Dembele's departure. So I think it's going to be one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, the financial part of the Ferran Torres stuff is the 21-year-old Spaniard, I think, is outside Barca's price range, as you said. But the good news is the 21 million euros that City paid him would keep the amortization on his contract until 2025 within reach. So they would, that being Barca, they'd be in a good spot there. But yeah, the number of the clubs to agree is apparently, I mean, 70 million in installments even. So it might be 30 up front plus even 40 million in add-ons and add-ons that are easy to reach. That come
right, yeah. Like he plays half the games or something, yeah. Something
like that. I mean, and listen, I understand the argument of Coutinho and Griezmann and having others off the wages, off the books, and that happened very quickly, right? That quick turnover of okay, well, now this money's all freed up, and even if Dembele's money is gone too, but paying in installments does make me uncomfortable. But that's just me too. I mean, again, I'm not a billion-dollar company, right? So I'm the guy that neurotically pays off my credit card in full every month. I'm the one, I only feel comfortable buying a car if I can get 85% out of pocket or pay 85% of it out of pocket. I won't take an interest rate over 3%. So, you know, the we'll pay you back for a while doesn't sit well with me personally. That's just not how I like to financially operate. But again, I'm not a club that is able to take on 1.2 billion euros of debt and still manage to be able to function as a gigantic profit-making global brand. And yeah. That's not me. I mean, people, the Barcelona podcast, thanks everyone for listening. We've got, with Xavi, it seems like we've got more listeners and people are more excited. But yeah, it's not those numbers. It's not those figures. But
right. I mean, I think that part actually bothers me less, especially since, I mean, if it is something structured like that, where you do 30, 40 million upfront and then whatever it is, like whether you do add-ons or incentives, or you just set up kind of a payment plan and over, you know, 3 years, 4 years, whatever it is, you pay it off. That doesn't bother me so much because conceivably, if we're already talking now about, given where we were 6 months ago, if we're talking now about Barca returning to the market, even, you know, speaking with a straight face about spending 40, 50 million on a player, there seems to be some sort of a rebound in the finances. And
for sure,
it's probably,
it's coming.
And it's not outlandish to assume that 2 to 3 years from now, as some of these contracts fall off and, you know, some of the business, you know, the business kind of rebounds in the world, ideally, hopefully returns to, you know, some semblance of normalcy. I mean, I'm guessing the financial rebound has got to be coming in the next couple of years. So, yeah. So if you're paying an extra, you know, 7 or 8 million a year for Ferran Torres, that you couldn't necessarily pony up at the time that you got him. That doesn't so much bother me. It's just the idea that, and honestly too, he's the kind of player that is sort of worth going to the mat for. I think he's, you know, we talk so much about the financial aspects of so much of this stuff, but there is the point of the excitement for the player that would be joining the club. And I do think that he's the caliber of player and the style of player there have to be some risks. You know, there's this, the situation in which the club finds itself, you know, you have to make some bets at some point. And, you know, this seems like a worthwhile wager to make. I mean, I think the downside is limited in terms of like, he too, you know, we were talking about the style of Arthur Cabral, but I mean, I think just the way that Ferran Torres, just the way that he plays, the quality that he has, and the way he kind of profiles out, he's not a player that's going to flame out. Like he's not the kind of guy that you're going to spend 40, 50, 60 million on. And he's not going to join that cavalcade of midfielders from the last decade who vanished or turned into pumpkins the second they arrived in Barcelona. Like this guy's going to be good. Yeah. I mean,
I want to take it even one step further that, I mean, you kind of beat me to the punch, but I really like Ferran Torres and I really, really like the idea of the Valencia product in Xavi's system. You know, I've been doing this long enough where I get to do my victory laps because when we had Coutinho was being questioned and Griezmann was being questioned. I threw my hesitation out there. Even Memphis, how, I mean, we got it a little bit wrong, but also can't tell me that a front three of potentially Ferran Torres as a false nine or Ansu, you know, and then Pedri on the left and Ferran Torres on the right. Is Memphis back on the bench and is he a rotation piece? I don't know the answer to that. But what I do know is that if Ferran Torres arrived and is fit and is healthy, he is on that right wing for a long time for
Edson.
I think he's a really great talent. I mean, that hat trick as a false nine with Spain lets you understand and believe. I mean, it was a showcase of the kind of movement that he can have with a dynamic midfield, the likes of Gabi or Pedri behind him. And it shows kind of movement and fluidity that that front three could have with the likes of Ferran Torres as well as Ansu Fati. And you also understand why Dani Olmo is still being, you know, that name is being thrown out there. But if I have to choose between Olmo and Ferran Torres, I choose Ferran Torres if he's healthy. So, I mean, just the visual of Torres on Xavi's right wing is tantalizing, as you said, at worst.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a foot injury has limited him to 7 appearances this season, but he still has 3 goals in those 7 appearances. And it should be noted, too, it's not a lack of appearances due to his injury. I mean, that's what's keeping him out. It's not a lack of trust from Guardiola, which is a big difference where it's not that he's...
Oh, that's huge. He's not one of these guys that Man City has... You know, because this happens every couple of years when, you know, the Man City, the accumulation of talent becomes such that one or two world-class players ultimately find themselves out in the cold. And if not even completely out in the cold, but just kind of playing a little bit of a bit part. And even though, you know, everything, they have the esteem and they're well compensated, whatever, it's beneath their talent. That's not what's happening here. He's not bellyaching because Pep Guardiola has kind of buried him on the bench or forgotten about him. No, it's just he's been nicked up a little bit. And that's, and I mean, I think he is, I agree with everything you just said about the idea of him on the right wing. I do think the most interesting question would be what happens to Memphis if Ferran Torres does arrive. Because
let me ask the question that, I mean, is everyone healthy? That's
well, yeah. I mean, I guess in that hypothetical, Memphis, yes.
I mean, not to say that, I mean, Braithwaite potentially back in January again, Pedri and Gabi, where is all that going to fit together? And then Ansu coming back as well. But we keep saying they're coming back. We keep saying that, but Memphis doesn't come off the field. So it feels like you don't need just one player like Dembele or Fati or Pedri coming back, but you need multiple players to come back to even have Memphis get subbed off the field. I mean, that's what we're talking about. So
yeah,
I think it would affect in the near term. It wouldn't affect it. Now, if you bring Adeyemi in the summer, now you're asking questions of how do you fit Memphis, Torres, Ansu, and Adeyemi with the assumption that Dembele is gone. And those are good problems to have down the road. But I mean, with the injury, not that Ferran Torres doesn't have a major injury history, but with the injury to the foot, which is a tough injury in the game of football. And then with Memphis, who, believe it or not, has usually had an injury bug, who's been completely healthy for Barca, fortunately. And Ansu, as we know, cannot really stay healthy right now. You hope that he can come back and just stay on the field for a long time. But
I
mean, obviously, we're going to have to call Ansu injury prone until further notice, until he plays almost a full season. So, I mean, Ferran Torres, it's not even that he'd be insurance, but to have 3 or 4 attackers that you do actually trust up top would put them in a good spot. And the other thing that I do worry about at this point, we're talking about this Ferran Torres stuff is, you know, as Kool-Aids, because Barca usually have the financial metal to talk themselves into players, I can find myself saying, hey, you know, how many have I got wrong, right? Eric Garcia and Sergino Dest, maybe I've got those wrong. Maybe I was a little biased on those. But, you know, generally, if there's a player I really, really like Frankie DeYoung, I yelled about, Pedri, I yelled about. There were players that I've yelled about before in the academy. The last part of our show, I'll preview it now, is just going to be the YouTube video that I came out with about the new rising stars, about the names I think Xavi could call up. And, you know, generally I get those right too. So I have to say that, you know, I'm going to put my endorsement behind Ferran Torres, right? As if he was running for public office. But what I can't endorse is, how likely this is. We know that Matteo Alemanni was in Manchester talking to an old friend in Ferran Soriano, as well as Stein. But the journalist that is pushed, and very rarely do I bring up the names of journalists, but it was Gerard Romero who pushed this the hardest. And what I will say about Romero is that he is about as reliable as a supermarket meat that is set, that says like still good on it. Like that's about how reliable Romero is, where you go to the supermarket and if your meat says still good, I don't know if you want to bring that home with you. You know, that said, Jared, I want to believe you and I want to take a chance on you, but I can't believe you. You know, he says that Torres has accepted a 5-year contract and a lower salary, which actually could be very true, that the player has already agreed to make the move and has agreed to the contract and the lower salary because he wants to come back to Spain. Apparently, he decided not to leave Valencia for quite some time, where he could have gone when he was 18 or 19, but he stuck around until he was what? I think, he just turned 19, or he had already turned 19. He was turning 20 when he went to Man City.
Something like that, yeah.
There could be a chance that he does want to return to Spain, and that's an honest thing that he wants to do, and he wants to return and play for Barcelona. And those things could all be true, and the player could also agree to the contract, but the clubs don't reach an agreement.
Well, exactly, yeah.
So I actually don't think Romero is going on, on too much of a limb to say that, hey, I think the player is going to want to come here and this is going to happen, but it's going to happen on the player's accord. It doesn't mean that Man City has to agree to a gosh darn thing.
No, exactly. I mean, because it's always, we've talked about this before in different contexts and about different players, but every transfer, unless a guy is out of contract, unless the guy's purely a free agent, is, it's a three-way agreement. There's three parties have to be happy with everything. So, Barca can be delighted that they want to get Ferran Torres. Ferran Torres can, agree to a lower wage and, kind of say all the right things and truly mean them and want to come back to Spain. And, he'll only be 3 hours from Valencia and everything, great. But if Man City are like, no, we still have you under contract and, we value you at least 60 million. So we're not just in the feel good business. Like we do actually want some compensation for one of our ultra talented players leaving. Yeah. And you got to get there somehow. And that's where I do think I think they end up buying him kind of on installments. I mean, I think they, you probably do wind up agreeing to maybe like a 60-ish, maybe a 60, 65 number. And I'm guessing Barca maybe pony up 30 to 40 up front and, probably some combination of incentives and add-ons and also just simply a deferred payoff schedule, like however they want to set that up. As we were talking about it, we were talking about his age and his development and everything like that. And I don't mean this in terms of old on his body, but Ferran Torres is like an old 21, almost 22. And that I feel like I've known about this man and spoken about him for like a decade. But
I've been to Barcelona since he made his Valencia debut at 17. So he was one of those names that was linked way back in the day. Even again, we're talking 3-4 years ago. And then he became a pretty good player at Valencia. And then between the Spain international team, in not necessarily the Euro, but in those other appearances he's made throughout European qualifying, plus his brief time at Man City, he has kind of taken that next level. And again, I think it's his success from Valencia to Man City kind of quiet your heart and let you know that it wasn't just a system thing. It's that he actually had to play much more defensive at Valencia and he was at Valencia when they had to sell him. They were forced to sell him and they were playing that very defensive 4-4-2 and they were leaving holes, but he was still doing the work defensively and harboring such a gigantic load up top of, basically Valencia saying, hey, we need to stay up, Ferran, and we need you at 19 to make sure we stay up in the division. And so he has taken that responsibility for his hometown club, but then going to Man City, just being one of the players that is rotated and almost, again, if everything comes out well and everybody stays healthy, and even if Dembélé renews, Ferran Torres has played a role at Man City that he would optimally play in this 4-5 man forward line that Barcelona could potentially throw out there.
Yeah.
And so, that kind of even versatility in his role in the squad, but I think he would be the starter. And as I have said many times about Dembélé, as much as Dembélé, maybe you'd love to see him for 60 minutes, I think he is the most dangerous 40-minute player there is in the entire world. And if you started Memphis, Ansu, and Ferran Torres, and Dembélé is your fourth option, I mean, that is the best four in the world. Because you have Neymar, who's always hurt, and Messi and Kylian Mbappe. I understand that's tantalizing. And no matter where Erling Haaland goes, that changes the balance of power. But I would take that four some over any other four word line in the world, honestly.
If everyone's healthy and kind of on form, I think that makes a lot of sense because there are complementary skill sets and extreme highs in quality as well. These are supremely talented players who are complementary to one another. And I agree with you in the sense, I mean, I would not mind if, and now, you know, Mr. Dembele might mind, but I would not mind if Dembele got the last half hour of every game, because he is exactly the kind of dude that comes in and it's been a long game and, you know, the defenders are tired or, you know, the opposing midfield is tired.
Well, and he did the same thing that Ansu does in terms of, you know, going back, as much as we've been very complimentary of Abde and Abde good as well against Villarreal, the gravity of Dembele, he just forces defenses to constantly double him. Even if he doesn't do the right thing, even because they don't know what he's going to do. He doesn't know what he's going to do. And so they have to bring the extra help. And again, the same thing with Ansu, that the shooting lanes that Memphis isn't getting because Memphis is putting up shots with two defenders within the area. If you have the gravity of Ansu and the gravity of Dembele, especially Dembele against tired defenders, no shot. There's just going to be huge swaths. I mean, the sheer number of comebacks that Barca have had in the last 4 to 5 years, Barca could have those number of comebacks in a matter of a month. Yeah. I mean, that's also saying that the defense is also conceding those early chances, which is also still very possible.
You know, I mean, that possibility is very much in play because they are conceding chances and they are dodging some bullets right now. And I do feel like that is maybe one of the next horizons for the Xavi era is to, I don't know if it's, I mean, there's of course going to probably be some personnel changes, but I think also just some manner of tactical overhaul in the defense. I actually read an article yesterday or today, but basically just talking about how, and they were using the Villarreal game as an example, how apparently Eric Garcia's, you know, and you could just by watching Eric Garcia's mandate was to just follow Moy Gomez around. So Moy Gomez would just like drag him out of the right back spot. And so there would just be like these chasms behind, you know. And so, I mean, I think tactically there's, you know, and the article was essentially talking about how maybe someone else, but Chelsea in particular, as an example of play man-to-man like that up until maybe the midfield stripe, but you can't open yourself up to that kind of thing. But I think gone a bit afield of the actual question, but I think like you said, there has to be two people dedicated to him because the one thing that he has that doesn't slump when he's healthy is speed. And it's one of those things, like you don't have to worry about moves coming off or skills or anything like that. This is, I can put my feet in the ground faster than you can, and I will leave you in the dust when I do it. And so I do like your conception of the four-man attack. If they can make the finances work and make the medicals work and everything like that, I mean, I do think that would actually be, I mean, it would probably be, even taking into account wherever Erling Haaland winds up and, you know, greater health by, you know, for Neymar at PSG and things like that, it would still probably be a top three front line in the world, I think.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think it would immediately jump into the likes with Karim Benzema and Vinicius Jr., and you're wondering how good Barca could be. And if Ferran Torres does come in January, that does change a lot. It does change the calculus because Barca have basically not had Dembele for the first half of the season. They've not had body for the first half of the season. So for Barca, I mean, just the big picture there is that if Torres comes in January, somehow Barca is able to get that deal done. And the likes of Pedri and Ansu potentially returning in January too. Or I mean, Fati could be back actually next week, but we'll have to see, or a week and a half or something like that, potentially back for Bayern. But yeah, then Barcelona are in seventh place and they're actually not in a good spot to win the league. I think Real Madrid still wins the league at this juncture, but now top four is looking, I mean, likely, I mean, because the team should be that talented. So, all right, Emil, I think that'll wrap it up for another edition of the show. We have back to football, which is good because Real Betis and Bayern Munich, now the matches are getting even more stressful again, and Barca could unfortunately be out of the Champions League this time next Wednesday. And now we're kind of changing the expectations and the calculus for the season. But again, we'll cross those negative bridges when we have to. But for now, we want to thank everyone for joining the show. Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod, close Facebook group, Patreon, YouTube, you know, all the different places. And I have to say on YouTube, the final part of this show, as I say, thanks so much for listening to this edition of the Barcelona Podcast, the audio version. I'm going to end the show here. I laid down the audio from the YouTube video about the rising stars. I know there are some people, I mean, our listeners who want to hear about that next generation. We talked about center back, so I'd make sure I do, I'll give away that I did talk about Mika Marmol. I did talk about Diego Almeida. I think they're two high potential players that could potentially be looked at by Xavi as, you know, again, depending on the January transfer window. If Lenglet and Umtiti leave, Now that center back core is looking very, very thin, and then one or two injuries away from calling up somebody from Barca B or even the Juvenal A. So I throw the names at you there. So let's end with that audio now. Here we go.
Pedri, Ansu Fati, Serginho Dest, Ronald Araujo, Gabi, Nico Gonzalez, Ricky Puig, Yusuf Demir, Eric Garcia, Oscar Mingueza, Alex Balde, Easy Abde, Ilias Akomash, Alice Callado, Inaki Pena, Arnaud Tanas. That's 16 names of players 22 years or younger, with the exception of Callado, who have been on the first team bench at least once this season. Some of you may have already seen that Dream Team video that I made a few weeks ago, where I covered all of these names with the exception of Easy Abde and Ilias Akomaş, because they were just promoted to the first team basically in the last few weeks, so I won't do it again here. And for regular listeners of the podcast, you know that the current squad of very, very young players, and then veterans who are close to the twilight of their career, has been a slow, painful process with a lot of bad decisions along the way, so we don't need to rehash that here either. Instead, because new manager Xavi can bring up any La Masia player that he sees fit into his system, I've decided to release my biannual La Masia Rising Stars video a little bit early, because I want to get ahead of that next player that Xavi's going to be looking at. Especially with the club not having too much to spend in January, all reinforcements are either going to come from injuries, that being Ansu Fati, Pedri, Brathwaite, maybe a 10 million euro transfer in there, but largely the rest could be La Masia players who could fill a need in the Copa del Rey or some other La Liga match when something is decided, we'll have to say, in April or May. So without further ado, let's get into it. First on my list is Hondo Orellana, and those who've been following this channel and have watched my La Masia Rising Stars every 6 months or so for the last few years, you know that there will be repeat names on this list, because as players get older and they stay with the club but they haven't debuted for the first team, they do get closer and closer to making that jump. And in the case of Hondo Orellana, unlike some of the other names on this list that are repeats, Orellana is actually an unfortunate case of being repeated. Having dealt with injuries on and off last season, missing 6 matches to an ankle injury plus starts and stops and getting his match fitness made for a frustrating year under Garcia Pimienta last season. It likely didn't help that he would bounce back and forth between the pivot and an interior, swapping spots regularly with Nico, as the latter began to be groomed to audition for the pivot job with the first team. This season has been more of the injury bug for the defensive midfielder, with a muscle injury keeping him out from the beginning of November until at least the start of 2022. It would be a shame if all that missed time is the reason why the 21-year-old never gets a reasonable chance under Xavi. Xavi can try to be patient with him, but that midfield depth chart is deep. The big thing that I think Hondo still has going for him is with upcoming Copa del Rey matches and Sergio Busquets and Frankie de Jong potentially at those pivot spots needing some rotation, Hondo still perfectly fits that mold, and he probably is the most first team ready to jump into a pivot spot if Nico is still considered an interior. And I can see Hondo filling in that 3-4-3 that Xavi wants to play, especially with the young players and rotation in Copa del Rey. And for Hondo Orellana, it does feel a bit like it's now or never. We do have to wait another month for him to return, and the spring is going to say a lot about his future. Two is Mikko Marmol. Alright, long-time viewers of this channel will have a pretty good gripe that the first two are clear-cut repeats, but that's because I think and honestly believe that these two are the next two in line. We did talk about Marmol on the last edition of the podcast, so make sure you check that out and then come back here so we can talk about Marmol. The now 20-year-old is on this list over partner Arnaud Comas because he's been the mark of consistency this season for Barca B, playing more minutes than anybody else under Sergi Barjuan. He's left-footed and played at left-back for most of his career, and made quite the rounds in Catalonia. He was a member of the first ever pre-Benjamin class in La Masia before stops at Yabaki Teresa, the childhood club Busquets and Ricky Puig, and CF Dom and Yabaki again. In 2018, he returned to Barca's academy and has gone from versatile left-back or left-center-back to arguably the most important player at Barca B. The now full-time center-back has grown into his body quite a bit, and it's that left foot that could have Xavi taking a look at him. Come January, Ndengley and or Umtiti is in fact sold, and Xavi still wants to play a 3-4-3 with three center backs, I could see Marmol easily being an option for a Copa del Rey match or two. Three is Diego Almeida. Let's stick with the center backs because I want to catch this star before it burns too bright. Diego Almeida has been discussed on the podcast, on this channel, or on the website for a number of years now, and his ascent has not slowed. All the way back in 2018, I wrote for Barca Blog that even at 14, he was showing great promise, and I kind of broke my own rule about considering the potential of players under the age of 16. Well, 3 years later, and he's still right on track, but even more so. Born in Rubí, Spain, 15 kilometers from Barcelona, to Ecuadorian parents, he's just accepted a call to the full Ecuador national team for a friendly against El Salvador this week, after playing for both Ecuador and primarily Spain at youth level. He could still opt to play for Spain, but a call to a full international squad is a pretty big deal. At 17, he's yet to make an appearance for Barça B, but over the weekend, reported Spanish journalist Albert Roge did mention that he was playing a very similar position that we saw Eric Garcia play against Villarreal, which is that right center back spot, but really has to defend out wide, but will step into the midfield in the buildup as this inverted defensive midfield slash center back position, but as I said, defend out wide, which does ask a lot about a player to be versatile enough to do all those different things. And it's really telling that Almeida at Juvenil A was given the task to basically learn this position, and I'd say Xavi's position. And that's the main reason why I had to put him on this list now. Is Xavi already giving instructions to the U19s to look at that next center back option at the right center back spot that Xavi wants? I couple that with the interest of PSG and Bayer Leverkusen, and Diego Almeida could be a case of a player who does play for Barça B eventually, but he might get a first team call up before he gets called up to Barça B, as odd as that is. The other thing that calms me about this transfer talk is that Almeida has been with Barça since the pre-Benjamin level, so it'd be a surprise to see him leave this close to the first team. In my honest opinion, he's been the best passing center back in the academy for at least the last 5 years, and that's an overwhelming skill that may come in handy soon. Four is Ana Alacan, and it's a fourth repeat because these players are getting better and better, but Alacan is cheating a little bit. I'll explain what I mean in a second. And for our fifth entry coming up next, I will give three names just to make sure I'm fair about this. It is surprising that I'm continuing to put the 17-year-old Alacan on this list because he hasn't actually played since the last edition of the La Masia Rising Stars over the summertime. He's been out with a long-term knee injury. But I still had to put Alacan here because he's still a few months younger than Almeida and he's already made four appearances with Barça B. Unfortunately, yes, all of those did come last season and he's been dealing with a serious knee injury and he hasn't been back on the field yet. He could return in January, but I think he'll spend the rest of the season on the left wing for Juvenil A and maybe he can return to Barça B if things go well. He may be a future number 9 or he could stay on the left wing. And looking at the way that the first team is made up, I could see Xavi taking a hard look at Alacan for some left wing appearances as early as next season. There really aren't that many natural left wingers, or right wingers for that matter, in the first team. And the fact that Alacan is a wide forward that does have some finishing product makes me believe that if he can come, and it's a big if he can come back healthy, that he's immediately going to vault right back into that conversation for a potential first team call-up. That's what keeps him on this list and continues to make him a rising star, even on the sideline. All right, let's stick with Juvenil A for the last trio, even though I do throw in an additional name here too. So it's just a hodgepodge at the end of names that I think you need to know. And the reason I stuck with Juvenil A is because this is a different video than the La Masia Rising Stars that I usually do. The likes of Lamine Yamal and Arnau Pradas are exciting, but they are many years away from the first team. So I really wanted to stick with that 17 or older group because I've been proven by the likes of Gavi, by the likes of Ansu, by the likes of Pedri, that now 16, 17 is the time that this kind of squad without the financial metal to bring in other talents might be relying on these youngsters. And the trio I picked play three different positions, and two of the three are pretty deep down that midfield depth chart. But as Gavi showed us, you could leapfrog anybody as long as you're good enough. So in the case of Gavi, let's go with two of his former teammates, captain of the U19's defensive midfielder Marc Casado and attacking midfielder Chus Alba. Chus Alba has been on this list before, and I'm putting him here again, because the first team could see a few exits, and all of a sudden, the 18-year-old is being looked at in a Copa del Rey match as one of the high interiors. He has the skill set of a luxury number 10, but fortunately for him, he's learned how to play as an interior, and that'll suit him well. Casado, meanwhile, is probably behind Jandro and Alvaro Sanz for Xavi to take seriously as a potential pivot, but the 18-year-old may have more potential than those two, and yeah, is only a year younger than Nico. To remind people how good they are two of the primary reasons at that age level why the club was comfortable letting Xavi Simons go to PSG and not fighting harder to keep him a few years ago. Casado and Aleix Garrido, another 18-year-old midfielder I'm adding for a quick bonus, have been called up to the Barça B bench recently, and those debuts are coming. And last but not least, here's a name that culés are just getting used to, and that's 18-year-old Astanas Pedrola. The former Espanyol and Royce player joined the Juvenil A team over the summer, and while there wasn't a lot of high points for the U19s in the UEFA Youth League, which they're already eliminated from, Pedrola certainly stood out. He's a traditional right winger, fast and confident in 1v1s, and he hugs the touchline. I know we're just getting to know Abde, but Pedrola looks like Abde. He's made two appearances for Barca B, starting the last one, and don't be surprised if you see more of him very soon. Because Pedrola did join up with Juvenil A, which is part of the La Masia umbrella, and doesn't have to do that weird argument thing about Barca B, we're going to consider him a La Masia product. But for Pedrola, at 18, he's kind of already getting to the point where he might be ready for the first team. And as I keep saying about those ages, at 18, he fits almost somewhere in the middle of that dream teen generation. So I would say Pedrola, next to Abde or Demir or Ilas Jakomash, is another one of those options that Xavi's probably taking a hard look at. So that'll do it. I guess four main names and then three, four, five, six other names there at the end. And I know these videos aren't for everybody, so if you do like these kind of videos, make sure you give this video a like, subscribe to the channel, and as always, until next time, Forza Barca.